Good afternoon. Welcome to the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And welcome to us hosting an important dialogue today on the future of the United States Peace Corps. As many of you know in this room, hundreds of thousands of Americans have served as Peace Corps volunteers over the last six decades. They've changed lives, they've built lifelong friendships, and I would argue most importantly, that they've been transformed themselves. RPCVs, or Return Peace Corps volunteers, come back better Americans. They have a global perspective that can only really be gained after serving for 2 years in a community that isn't their own, or at least not at the start. To me, I see Peace Corps as both a service and a development organization. It's a soft power tool for our foreign policy toolbox, and it's citizen diplomacy at its best. Here at CSIS, my job is I'm director of our global food security work, and that's included over the last few years research and analysis on how Peace Corps has been implementing the US global food security strategy. Not a lot of people know that Peace Corps is one of 11 US agencies engaged in something called Feed the Future, which is the US Global Hunger and Food Security Initiative. So in the last few years, I've had the privilege of meeting with Peace Corps volunteers in Tanzania, Guatemala, Senegal, Ghana, and they're working at the community level to improve global food security. That's improving crop production, it's teaching better nutrition practices, it's strengthening government extension services. What I learned and that I liked is that volunteers aren't just doing this that are in the ag sector, but Peace Corps is engaging volunteers across its sectors to reduce hunger, poverty, and malnutrition. Whether a volunteer is building a school community garden or teaching climate-smart agriculture practices, I can tell you this. Their experience shapes them for the rest of their lives. I should know because I was a Peace Corps volunteer. Twice, actually. When I joined Peace Corps, it was right out of college, and I was altruistic and adventurous. To be honest, I didn't really understand the professional benefits that Peace Corps would give me later in my life. It sparked in me a passion for international development, and it essentially charted my career path moving forward. At the time, I just wanted to live in another country and doing something meaningful and fun. In Bulgaria, where I served as a high school English teacher, I founded a young woman's leadership camp called Girls Leading Our World, or Camp GLOW. Peace Corps is no longer in Bulgaria, but that leadership academy still exists today. It's now called the GLOW Association. It's a female-led Bulgarian NGO run by alumni who still continue to empower and educate young women. In Jamaica, several years later, I served as the first Peace Corps response volunteer. It was called Crisis Corps back in those days. In Jamaica, I served directly with disadvantaged youth. I worked with a small local NGO on grant writing, strategic planning, communications. And it was in Jamaica after my service with Peace Corps, which is where I got my first job with US Agency for International Development, or USAID, which really pointed me towards the career path that I'm on today. So looking back when I first was a Peace Corps volunteer, let's fast forward a few decades. The Peace Corps director when I was a volunteer in Bulgaria is now not only my CSIS colleague, but he happens to work in the office adjacent to mine. It's an honor for me to introduce you all to him. His name is Mark Snyder, sitting here in the front row. He's currently the senior advisor to the CSIS Americas program and the CSIS Human Rights Initiative. And in this role, he helps remind us the importance that good governance plays in how critical that is to the progress of development and US investments in development. His experience includes working as, of course, the director of the Peace Corps from 1999 to 2001, but he's had a long, impressive career in senior leadership positions with the International Crisis Group, USAID, and the World Health Organization, to name a few. His interest in Latin America and the US leadership and US leadership was fostered when he first worked as a fellow and then a staff member for Ted Kennedy on Capitol Hill. Of course, I would say his career began when he was a Peace Corps volunteer. Mark, over to you.
Obviously, I want to thank Kimberly for that kind introduction. As she mentioned, when she served in Bulgaria, I visited her country as a Peace Corps director, and her program was exceptional. That was partly because her director, Perdita Houston, was a remarkable woman who believed that women's empowerment was fundamental to development and to democracy, and who inspired countless others throughout her life. And I should also note that just looking around the audience, we have another former director of the Peace Corps, Aaron Williams. And we have many former and current staff from the Peace Corps and from USAID, and from some former ambassadors as well. And to some degree, that's what the Peace Corps has done. It has sort of given a start to many of us who wanted to do something, contribute to U.S. foreign policy in a fundamentally different way, to contribute on the ground to the way that people see the United States and to the way that we can contribute to their development at the same time. I also want to note that this event today on the future of the Peace Corps is taking place appropriately on the 70th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The core values of the Peace Corps relate directly to the belief in the right of every human being to achieve his or her full potential, regardless of race, religion, or nationality. Volunteers convey those values during their service and hopefully during the rest of their lives as well. When President Kennedy signed the executive order in 1961 that formally established the Peace Corps, he said, and I quote, "We have in this country an immense reservoir of men and women anxious to sacrifice their energies and time and toil to the cause of world peace and human progress." Jody Olson was one of those who answered, serving first as a volunteer in Tunisia from 1966 to 1968, the same years that my wife and I served, my wife is right here, served in El Salvador as a Peace Corps volunteer. And Jody never stopped. Spanning the next five decades, she has done it all. Peace Corps country director in Togo, regional director for Africa and the Middle East, chief of staff to then director Paul Coverdale, deputy director, and then acting director, and now director. She is the most prepared director that the Peace Corps has ever had, going back to the founder and the first director, Sarge Shriver. Prior to returning to the Peace Corps in 2018, Dr. Olson was visiting professor at the University of Maryland, the Baltimore School of Social Work, and director of the university's Center for Global Education. She also oversaw health research projects in Malawi while teaching courses on international social work. And even while she was not a Peace Corps official, those rare years, I can attest that she always was available to all Peace Corps directors as a mentor, an advisor, and support, and a source of ideas. Jody?
What a pleasure to be here. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Kimberly. I appreciate that very kind introduction. And Mark, thank you. This all started over a lunch when we had this conversation that is now become this event. And I want to also thank you for all that you've done for Peace Corps over the years. And I hadn't realized that we were all Peace Corps volunteers at the same time. Different parts of the world, but it shaped us those same ways. As one Peace Corps director to another, thank you for your legacy of leadership. Thanks for your service. And to Aaron, thank you very, very much. Like CSIS, we at the Peace Corps also aspire to help chart a course towards a better world. We're grateful to this incredible organization for providing such far-reaching forum for this kind of thoughtful discussion. The topic is the future of Peace Corps. It's ever present in my mind, obviously, as the 20th director, and as a returned Peace Corps volunteer who served back in the agency's early years. I vividly remember standing in a classroom, it was my third day in country, in front of 40 14-year-old boys at the Lycée des Garçons de Sousse as a volunteer in Tunisia. I was 22 years old, nervous beyond belief, had no idea what my first words would be. I remember looking at them all, thinking, and looking left and going, oh my heavens, there's a door. I could walk out that door and be done. But I knew my parents wouldn't be very happy if I showed up back home a couple of weeks later, nor would my husband, who was happy having his first day as a Peace Corps volunteer. So I stepped forward, held my breath, and introduced myself in English, and then asked the students to introduce themselves. That day's lesson launched my 2 years as a Peace Corps volunteer, 2 years in North Africa that shaped my life and my career more than I could have dreamed or hoped for. At that time, however, I was most worried about my students' exams. I immersed myself in a way of life that was utterly unlike the life I had known back home in Salt Lake City, Utah. I learned how to be present, how to listen, really and truly listen. My success as a volunteer absolutely depended on that. How to honor, respect, and learn from people different from me in actions, thinking, and even being. I discovered that despite differences in language, culture, and background, there was so much more that connected us. I learned what it meant to serve my country and how it felt to be part of something far, far greater than myself. I'm here today because Peace Corps changed my life and because I believe passionately that Peace Corps will continue to change lives for many more years to come. Since 1961, almost a quarter of a million Peace Corps volunteers have served in 141 countries around the world, helping communities tackle the most pressing issues of our time, from environmental protection to public health to food security to creating opportunity for the world's next generation of leaders. As we speak, Peace Corps volunteers are teaching girls in Zambia how to code, leading HIV/AIDS prevention programs in Ukraine, mentoring aspiring entrepreneurs in Peru, fighting malaria in Uganda, and helping farmers in Nepal feed their families and their communities, as Kimberly had noted. At the time of its creation, Peace Corps presented a model for overseas service and global engagement that was so unprecedented that many said it will never work, it can't be done. And I actually read some of the letters from the archives of the Hill who said it cannot be done, and Sarge Shriver writing back saying, yes, it can, and we will do it. Yet the idea of Peace Corps, the idea that volunteers can serve their country in the cause of peace by living and working in other countries, struck a chord. As I think many of you know, it was October 14th, 2 in the morning, on the steps of the Student Union of the University of Michigan, that then Senator Kennedy, tired, just wanting to go to bed, found out that there were at least 5,000 students and that he better say something. So at 2 in the morning, he spoke for about 2 minutes, and in those 2 minutes, he introduced the idea of Peace Corps. Little did he know that the next morning, signatures began, and in the next 3 days, there were over 10,000 signatures from the University of Michigan students saying, Peace Corps, you must honor that commitment. That was the power of the idea of this program. It inspired a generation to ask what they could do for the world. It's a call to service that inspires us still. 57 years after our founding, our work continues through the service of about 7,000 volunteers in more than 60 countries. As community health promoters, English and math teachers, business development advisors, environmental and agriculture specialists, and youth development mentors, our volunteers collaborate with their communities to create sustainable change. While much has changed since Peace Corps' founding, our mission to promote world peace and friendship has, nor have, our three goals towards that mission changed. As we look ahead to Peace Corps' future, there's so much that is still unwritten. The year we have an opportunity to celebrate not only the remarkable things which Peace Corps volunteers are doing in the field, but also recognize and appreciate the extraordinary efforts being led and accomplished by return volunteers around the world and here in the United States, here in Washington, and here in the room. We have not always stepped back to see and applaud the contributions being made by return volunteers. These are men and women who have embraced totally the concept of Peace Corps as a call to lifelong service. These are return volunteers who have skillfully distilled the values, beliefs, and talents and abilities gained through their Peace Corps service and taken them to organizations, communities, and people over and over again since they left their host country. There are so many stories yet to be told, so many stories yet to be lived. My year has brought me repeatedly back to one word or concept, connections. Freshly arrived volunteers establishing connections with their community and their counterparts. Volunteers sharing their rich experience with family and friends in the United States through their social media connections. And return volunteers continuing to serve and contribute to their country and community of service through technological connections. I'm excited to better highlight these remarkable Return Peace Corps volunteer efforts, gathering the stories, quantifying the impact, skillfully describing and sharing with the larger U.S. population, demonstrating that Peace Corps is a wise and worthwhile investment of the U.S. taxpayer dollars and a significant return on that investment. I believe that we need to maximize the use of technology to enhance connections between volunteers and communities so that they can serve as the link for ongoing connection and service long after the volunteer has returned home, wherever across the United States that home might be. We're committed to sustaining those connections. I believe that increased connection facilitated by technology can empower us and enable us to explore new service models, allowing for Peace Corps to be viewed as a highly relevant, vital, and agile institution as we begin to position ourselves for a sixth decade of service to the United States and to the world. We do not know changes in the world we may see in the next few years, but I do know this. In a world that can seem both irrefutably interconnected and impossibly divided, the face-to-face, side-by-side, shoulder-to-shoulder work of Peace Corps is who we are and must continue to be. The work of our volunteers, building capacity, cultivating relationships, and creating the conditions for peace, matters now more than ever. I envision a Peace Corps that remains the world's preeminent volunteer agency, offering motivated Americans the opportunity to serve their country. I envision a Peace Corps that sends volunteers to interested countries where they are needed most, where they can achieve the greatest impact, and where they deliver the best return on investment for American taxpayers. I envision a Peace Corps that recruits America's best, brightest, and most resilient volunteers to carry on our country's legacy of service. I envision a Peace Corps that continues to be present in some of the most hard-to-reach corners of our world. A Peace Corps that listens, really and truly listens, to the communities that it serves. A Peace Corps that honors, respects, and learns from people from all aspects of our humanity. A Peace Corps that inspires tomorrow's generation to ask not what the world can do for them, but what they can do for the world. Thank you all.
For those in the audience, you should have been given a little piece of paper. If you have questions, please fill out the questions, and Owen in the back of the room, just raise them up and Owen will collect them. But to get started, let me ask you the question that I continue to get most often when I talk about the Peace Corps. Sort of, why did you join the Peace Corps? And what was your most meaningful experience in Tunisia?
Why did I join the Peace Corps? It was 1964 at the University of Utah, and I was at a sorority dinner, and a returned Peace Corps volunteer stood up, probably one of the first, and spoke for 10 minutes about his Peace Corps experience, and he sat down, and I put my fork down, and I went, oh, I think I want to do that. There was no grand scheme. It was, oh, I think I want to do that. And a year and a half later, I was a Peace Corps volunteer. There were so many memorable experiences as a volunteer. I'm sure any of you who were a volunteer, you're going, oh, wait a minute, was it this or this or this or this? But very memorable for me was a family that I ate with every day. And we became, I was part of the household. And at a point about 3 months in, they decided they wanted to give me a very special Tunisian dish. And they were excited. They had worked a whole week on getting ready for it. And so the Friday when I came, they had dressed up. I had dressed up. I just knew this was going to be a wonderful time because I loved Tunisian food. And so with great fanfare, they brought out the dish. It was a half of a cow's head with eyes included and ear. And I just remember that moment of, how's my Arabic doing? Not well. How's my sense of psychologically not being able to eat this and communicate that in a local Arabic? And I remember thinking, do I just put my fork in? Or do I tell them that, you know, I don't think this is going to work out? And that joy of my having the courage to say, I don't think this is going to work out. And they all laughed. They went into the kitchen with me while I fixed my own meal and brought it out. And we enjoyed that experience for the rest of the time. But you're at that moment where you trust your family that you can be honest, even though it was going to disappoint them. And I only got closer to them because of that cow's head.
You know, it's 57 years since the beginning of the Peace Corps, and there obviously have been enormous changes in the world, not to mention 9/11. Why are you still convinced that the Peace Corps remains relevant in today's world, as I do?
The relevance of Peace Corps is embedded in the uniqueness of Peace Corps. I think, how did it happen that in that legislation of September 1961, a mission, world peace and friendship, and three goals, technical support, sharing who you are as an American, bringing that experience home and sharing it here. Those three goals are equal, and they're integrated. That is what created this unique experience that we call Peace Corps. Because what it's saying is that in order to provide technical support of whatever that is, teaching, agriculture, health, environment, you have to establish trust, long-term trust, with the community in which you work. How do you establish that trust? You establish it by sharing a cow's head. You establish it by working with that local language, taking the kids to market, eating out of the same fufu bowl. You then become part of who they are, so that as you introduce a suggestion or an idea or a thought, they go, oh, let's think about that, because I trust this person because he is or she is happy to be here. through the 57 years, that core element has stayed strong. And when I think of today, in the communities, in the neighborhoods, in the families in which we serve, we're needing to communicate that same message. I'm not here to help. You're not here to receive. You're here to help. You're here to discover. I'm here to discover. I'm here to be part of that experience. And that changes us today as much as it changed us 57 years ago. It works and changes the community as much as it did before. We might use different words. We might be talking on the phone some of the time. But that experience has not changed. And that's who we are still as human beings.
I share that view. And particularly as now, it's even more important, I think, for the world around us to continue to engage with Americans and see them through the eyes of the volunteer in their community and in their homes. Now, when I was director, I made a conscious decision to pursue two priorities. One was to respond, it was 1999-2000, was to respond to the HIV/AIDS crisis by requiring that all volunteers in Africa, either as their primary assignment or as their secondary one, sort of after hours, would become HIV/AIDS educators. And the second was to encourage volunteers at that time to see information technology and access to the internet as a development tool. So what are your priorities?
Well, first, I want to pick up on your priorities, because shortly after you left was when the PEPFAR program, when President Bush introduced the PEPFAR program, and beginning in 2002, Peace Corps as an agency was invited into that multi-government effort that ultimately put in $40, $50, $60 billion. And we have been a very active part of that PEPFAR effort, HIV, ever since right after you left. So you can feel really good about that part. Second, I'm going to pick up on the technology, because it's where our priorities are now too. You were director when I think the internet was beginning, and www, we all knew it meant something, but we didn't know what it meant. And there was a screen, but you didn't know how to get much on it. Well, now, as you all can envision, that social media is about how most of the communication goes. Cell phones, smartphones, all those elements that connect people in ways that they were not connected before is endemic to who we are. And it's important that we at Peace Corps work with that. I know that when I came to Peace Corps 9 months ago, it was like, oh my heavens, three goals. It's face-to-face. We share, we shake hands, we hug, we eat together. That's what Peace Corps is. What I've come to appreciate, and thinking back to your legacy, Mark, that those technical components make that face-to-face, make those meals, make with the kids, the counterparts in the schools, the counterpart with the farmer, much more relevant than ever before. I mean, for just a quick example, and it really has to do with us collectively nudging ourselves into taking advantage of the connectivity that we now have, is that one of the secondary projects in Ghana was developing apps for the farmers to get the cost of cashew nuts in Accra before the middle person came to offer them a price. Another one of their projects was to do apps for market women so that they could move money back and forth informally on their phones. Now, the volunteer who was telling me about this experience that he was having, he was with the local language, he had his host family, he was front and center with his school and his counterpart, but together they were able to open up technology for many more people in Ghana that otherwise would have been able to be connected. And with that, all these projects that were very important. So we have so much out there now that we can take advantage of. Volunteers today come in with sort of technology on all 10 fingers. And I have very little idea what they know how to do, but I'm sure it's wonderful. And to, in effect, enhance their opportunities to work with counterparts to expand that process and to expand that knowledge in the communities where they work, I think is a very important part of Peace Corps today. Just to give one last quick example, we had a minister of education from a country that we had been in many years ago and left, and this minister of education said, please come back. Great, I always love those stories. And he said, we want you to teach English, which is an important part of what Peace Corps always does. And he said, aha, however, I want you to teach English through and with the websites, through the computer, with apps, because we in this country need to use our English to better do small business with each other in this country. You have that double set of skills that come in right together. So yes, teach English, but you're going to also be teaching us how to better understand our own technology. That's some of what we are today.
Thank you. That also leads right into the other question that I'd like you to speak about, which is, are there countries and are there programs who can expand the number of volunteers that they're receiving, and where does it become a way for the Peace Corps to continue to contribute to development in those countries? So are there more countries out there that want the Peace Corps? And if there are there more volunteers here and around this country who are willing to join and become part of those new programs?
Okay, well, first with the programs that we have resources to continue the approximate number of volunteers that we have now, which is in the range of 7,000. And in that process, we also know that there's elements in the world that I tend to use the word kerfuffle, but I don't know where I got that word, but let's just say for things that don't go perfectly. And so our ability to be steady in every country around the world is not quite perfect. So it's always important for us to stay strong, for us to be looking at countries where we can increase, and we're looking at two, three, or four right at this moment. Greg is very much aware of a couple of them. And we're also looking at the invitations that we're getting from other countries where we can be who we are, where we can provide development assistance, and we can offer the technical skills that these countries are asking for.
And I will say that I'm, you mentioned having the resources to permit continued levels of volunteers and programming. When I became director, I had a lunch with Sarge Shriver, and I said, you know, we're hoping to increase the number of volunteers on a number of programs, maybe a couple of thousand more over the course of the next couple of years. And Sarge responded, what are you talking about? He said, we should not only double the size of the Peace Corps, we should get to 100,000.
Yeah, I remember that.
Now, we may not be there.
No.
But the question is, do we have potential volunteers out around the country that you think that we could, that are there ready to join the Peace Corps? And I should add, sustain the level of diversity that the Peace Corps has clearly done a remarkable job. When I was director, we barely got to 20% in terms of volunteer diversity. And now it's up around 30, 32%?
Just about 32 to 35%.
So can we increase the size and maintain the diversity?
Yes. We can. Let me just talk a little bit about our recruitment, because I know that several people have said to me, but I don't see the ads on TV. How do you recruit? Well, step one, as I talk through this a little bit, is we just dropped our last formal ad And I'm going, what, why? Ads are great. No, everybody does social media these days. So we're embedded now in podcasts. We're embedded in, and I could name other social media, but I don't even know the names of most of them. But that's how younger people today are connecting with this opportunity of Peace Corps. Second, we have changed our recruitment strategy to the point that our recruiters are working more comprehensively in the departments and colleges of the universities in the areas where we need resources. For example, I was at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, where we have a Peace Corps prep program, which I'll describe, but it was headed by someone in agriculture, a faculty member in agriculture, and he really wanted ag volunteers to join the Peace Corps. So we work with that College of Agriculture at the University of Tennessee. We are looking for volunteers in education, where they know curricula, where they know program design, where they know teacher training. We're embedding ourselves further into these colleges of education so that as we get young people, and they're still pretty young, that they come with degrees in the fields that where we really need them. And in addition, I want to just advertise very quickly the Peace Corps prep program. Schools, many more universities are signing up for it, and they agree to offer a certain set of courses. They're courses that are already on campus, but they involve cross-culture, they involve languages, they involve international technical training. And at the end of the 4 years, they get a certificate of being prepared for Peace Corps. But what's exciting about this program is it says, Peace Corps says at these universities, we believe in international, we believe in global. We're putting our name to these set of courses that prepare so many students for this work, whether or not they go into Peace Corps. And I think that's a real beginning. On the last point about diversity, we're really proud of those numbers. We're really proud that the numbers are continuing to grow and that we are reaching to the U.S. population that really represents the diversity of this country. And we're staying very strongly with that. The populations at universities now are themselves extremely diverse, and it's our responsibility to bring them into Peace Corps, and we're strongly committed to that.
Great. Let me ask, when you look at the three goals of the Peace Corps, I know that you've been working on the issue of demonstrating results. So I'll let you go.
Okay. A lot of people over the years, and I, some of you and me, it's about stories. Aren't stories wonderful? And that we stay relevant by telling our stories. Well, as we all know, you all know, that as you work in monitoring and evaluation and you work at project design, it's, wait a minute, show me, that the hill says, show me, what is it? Over these last few years, Peace Corps has taken a really significant shift in, well, not shift, but in better organizing and framing projects. So that we now have very clear project designs. And with those project designs, what is the activity that the volunteer gives? What is the input that the volunteer brings? What is the output that that volunteer shows? And now, because of technology, those volunteers record that. So they get to see their own progress in recording women that come to a monthly meeting about entrepreneurship. And so they're seeing where they fit. Second, this information, these data points, come into the region and come into the agency, and we're working with other federal agencies, particularly USAID, so that they can then look at what the output is, the outcome is, sorry, and the longer output and sustainability. So we have become a very strategic point in longer term development efforts. I know that when I was with the last meeting of the President's Malaria Initiative group, they said, you have to start with that first data point. And it was they who are tracking so much of the malaria research. We have to know how many got a bed net. We need to know what they did with the bed net. We need to know. We just being present in our work in the community can be noting that. And so we're playing a more significant role, and a role that other agencies are really recognizing us for. For example, I was on a panel with the MCC, the Millennium Challenge Corporation, and they were talking about their STEM education program in Georgia. And as she talked about their program, she spent, I don't know how many of you were at the event, but almost a third of what she talked about were Peace Corps volunteers, and I'm going, yay. But the point of what was happening was they would give resources for laboratories and extra materials for the STEM programs within the schools. Peace Corps volunteers who were not directly working in STEM, but they would help set up the labs. They would work with after-school activities with the students, and they were noting what they were doing. And the representative from MCC said, we couldn't be measuring what we do in Georgia on this project without Peace Corps. And I think that we can be very proud collectively that we have gained a real understanding of that very unique role that Peace Corps volunteers play.
You know, one of the things that has been a concern over the years, and I think that over the terms of different directors, there's been an increase almost every four-year period. And that is the question of safety and security of volunteers. Mm-hmm. And so as you think about the world at large becoming a much more dangerous place, particularly for volunteers, but for people in general, how are you thinking about shifting to provide greater security, greater protection for volunteers, and also recognize health needs of volunteers? I mentioned the SAMFAR bill that just became law.
Let me start with the safety and security part. 9/11 happened, and over the year, 2 years after 9/11, I was at the agency at the time. The question was, oh my heavens, the world isn't safe anymore. That was a very tough moment because Peace Corps is dependent on being integrated into a community. And so we're watching barriers and we're watching other related things that take Americans, separate Americans from people in other countries. And at that point, we reframed our whole idea of safety and security to be integration, trust, and respect. And so we much more purposefully created training for Peace Corps volunteers, their host families, and their communities about how they were an integrated combination being in those communities. That philosophy of safety and security has stayed with us through the present. That it is out of that trust and out of that respect that, in fact, that community is there for the volunteer, and the volunteer is there for the community. Now, it's not just that. And this is where, again, technology is very helpful, is that we do have systems. Every volunteer has a cell phone. Every volunteer knows what to do in an emergency. We have very good ways of communicating with volunteers if something needs to happen very quickly. And so behind this integrative approach is a fairly strong system for emergency preparedness and evacuation or movement or stand fast, whatever is needed. And we have good links within the countries to be a couple of steps ahead. But because of that, we've been able to be in places that otherwise we would not be able to be there.
Great. Let me ask you this. These are excellent questions, by the way. I'm going to jump around a little bit. Over the course of your career in connection to the Peace Corps, what has changed the most and what has remained the same?
Let me start with what I think has remained the same. I have been able to visit about 5 different countries in the last 9 months and volunteers in every one of those countries. And to me, what has remained the same, I sit and I talk with them, I meet with them individually, I meet with the host families, I meet with the counterparts. We're doing all those things that you do with Peace Corps volunteers. That experience is largely the same. That way they connect, that way that language, that way the food, the way that they listen, absorb, give back, share, learn, that very tight connective process of those three goals has essentially not changed. Now, part of what's changed is all the technology that runs around that initial experience. And so on the plus side, part of what's changed is that families in the U.S., counterparts in the U.S., your best buddies from college are now, you know, chatting with you and your host family while you're having that experience. And so the experience of Peace Corps is now coming home even as it's being experienced. The other part is that we have to work with volunteers to say you don't spend a lot of your time in this part because of the importance of the connectivity with your families and your communities. And I think volunteers are really understanding, by and large, that there's a ways that you keep people back here involved, your other volunteers involved, but it's important to limit that so that your experience on the ground can remain very strong. If I were to say one other change I've really noticed, particularly in the last 10 years, I left 9 years ago and now I'm back, that we seem to be better integrated into the discussions about international development and international exchange and the international framework in which we all work. And I am really appreciative of how key professionals at other agencies are saying, well, Peace Corps is playing this part and can really define what that is. I'm sure that has nothing to do with the fact that we have returned Peace Corps volunteers now in all these other agencies. But that linkage has really, I think, strengthened the understanding of what our role is.
Let me ask you this. This is a question in relation to the recruitment policy where you have the focus on computer-driven and on internet application. The questioner says, what are you doing to recruit over 50 volunteers, some of whom may still need the traditional ads?
Right. That's a really good question. I'm sure it's all there, and I don't have a good answer right at the moment. I think for the older volunteers, and I've talked to several of the older volunteers, they get it largely the old-fashioned way, from their children, from their colleagues who have served, from word of mouth that has gone around. I was just talking to an invitee in Madison, Wisconsin, who is leaving next month, and it was because her daughter was a volunteer 6 years ago, and she fell in love with Peace Corps, and she said, I finally got the rest of the kids out of the house. Now I'm out of here, and I'm going to do it. But there's good advice in that question. I need to go back and check.
One of the things, which is an interesting question, and I'll start by saying that when I became the head of the Latin American Bureau, USAID, I remember the first, and Aaron may well remember this, the first meeting that I had with the whole staff, it just dawned on me, and I just asked the question, how many of you are returned Peace Corps volunteers? And about 40% of the people in the hall raised their hand. And there are many ambassadors that I've known who returned, Chris Hill, Johnny Carson, and others, Jim Michael, and who's here, by the way. And I look around, the question is, I look around and see return volunteers at agencies like state and USAID and NGOs active in social fields. The questioner says, but in the private sector and defense sector, I don't see that many return volunteers. And is there something that we can do to either diversify the experience or encourage return volunteers to go into those, let's say, into those sectors?
I think that, let me start with the private sector, of which I'm discovering there are more return volunteers than we know about, which reminds us that we need to highlight this much more, because highlighting what return volunteers in the private sector are doing now will encourage many more to go into the private sector. Now, anyone here in the private sector, we would welcome internships for returning Peace Corps volunteers or starter positions that a wonderful return volunteer could take on to increase, one, the visibility and the opportunity in the private sector. We know that we can probably encourage that more, but we can highlight much better those that are already in the private sector. At Peace Corps, on staff, of our 920, 77 are veterans. And I have been reaching out because I don't come from a veteran background. And I feel that it is important that I really become and understand the culture that comes through the defense. And so as we are making much more visible all of the diversity of the staff at Peace Corps, part of that is encouraging what veterans bring to Peace Corps. I hope, and we can continue to work with this, that that brings much more into open conversations as to how returning volunteers and former staff can actually look at defense as places to go.
There is also a question about, again, about the private sector, and which is clear when you look at international development now, there are a lot more instances where there's an effort to find ways to partner with the private sector on development issues around the world. Have you thought about ways in which volunteers in their current service can partner at the same time with the private sector in the countries where they're working?
It's a fun answer, but it's also a complex answer. A couple of elements of it. One of the ways that volunteers work in the private sector in the host countries is actually through the Rotary clubs. Rotary around the United States, and I want to do a special shout outs for Rotary. I've fallen in love with Rotary, that they have partnerships all over the world. And we have a memorandum of understanding with Rotary that as the Rotary is making its own commitment in a particular country, the volunteers have an opportunity to work with that Rotary in that country. That actually can be a model for how volunteers can move into some of the private sector in countries as the private sector here has private sector there, and that you're making that connection within the country itself. Another way is through our small project assistance and our private public PC, well, our private linkage program, where we have a whole system where money's anywhere from about $500 to maybe $5,000, it goes a little higher once in a while, that the volunteer with the community creates a project, the Peace Corps staff in country say, wow, this looks like it just meets all the core values of Peace Corps. It gets posted on our website and people make contributions. And 100% of those dollars go straight to the project. And we raise upwards of $1 million, $1.5 million a year to these very small projects all over the world. And it's a very exciting way for elements of the private sector, for local businesses. Rotary also funds through that mechanism. But the funding for a volunteer always ranges within the few hundred to just a few thousand for all the obvious reasons that we're about the people to people. We're about the behavior that goes on.
One of the thoughts that I had was that those project funds, if you were to get a significant donation, mm-hmm. Where the decision making is with the Peace Corps and with the volunteers mm-hmm. and the mission and the country directors, would that be something that would be welcome?
It's complicated. Normally when there's resources that are being donated, well, let me take, for example, the Gates Foundation and through Exxon, I think. A lot of work has been done with bed nets and with treated bed nets and with treated houses, all because of malaria and trying to prevent malaria and understand malaria. Well, Malawi, for example, where I spent several summers, there's a lot of research, there's a lot of high-level programming going on that distributes bed nets. We don't work with that directly because we're there for the ministry. We're not there for a company or a large organization. But what we do is that in the communities where we're serving, we can be providing the education about the use of the bed nets and the importance of the bed nets, and noting how the communities are using the bed nets, information that we give back to the Gates Foundation or whomever. So our links are indirect, but they help us play that key role in that community that something like the Gates Foundation is learning from the behavior we're describing and how it sets up future distribution of bed nets, but we don't normally distribute the bed nets per se.
Can you elaborate on the role that volunteers can play in advancing the work of other U.S. government and other international development agencies in countries? Are there ways to partner with those programs?
One of the ways that's really important is as Return Peace Corps volunteers go on the staff. And many, but I know we go beyond that. but a lot of how our partnerships are now evolving are because many Return volunteers are on the staff of the other agencies. In countries, as you all know, that we have country directors. Country directors are part of country team meetings once a week that are not sponsored, but organized by the ambassador. But at those country team meetings are USAID and all the other agencies that we might be working with. And so, particularly with USAID, that they have their resources, we know what their programs are. We are looking and working very directly with them. What is a behavior role that we can play? Is there, for example, through USAID, not pumps, but for the gathering water, wells, a well program that is going to be a fissure well that goes very deep. Well, they might turn to Peace Corps and say, you know, it's really important that the villages know about potable water in order for these wells to actually serve their purpose. And so we would connect, again, through whichever ministry is responsible, and we would be doing the education program for the communities where those wells are being dug. And we can give many, many kinds of examples where we work side by side. PEPFAR offers many, many examples of how we help people, you know, get once a month to the center so they can get their medication. We work a lot in prevention, and we work hand in glove with the other agencies that are doing their part vis-a-vis HIV.
And does that apply as to international organizations, that are engaged in those development kinds of activities.
Yeah, I mean, for example, coming back to the Gates Foundation, that as we know what they're doing in communities, we can play that important role. What's important, and whatever that linkage is that we're in touch with our ministries in that country, because first and foremost, we're there at the behest, at the invitation of the government, and we want to make sure that we're doing what ministries and local officials are asking us to do. But almost in every case, as there is an international organization that's doing something relevant to what Peace Corps does, we can play sort of a behavior component in working with people.
Let me ask you to respond to the question of, there's always been a separation from the beginning between the Peace Corps and U.S. foreign policy and the State Department.
Right.
So the Peace Corps independence. Could you describe that?
Sure. Actually, it goes back to March of 1961 in President Kennedy's office with Vice President Johnson and Bill Moyer. And at that moment, and Harris Wofford describes in great detail what that whole process was that ensured that Peace Corps was independent. And so you can thank Bill Moyer for a certain amount of Peace Corps' autonomy. That through that discussion, because a lot of people assumed and wanted Peace Corps as part of the Department of State, and Lyndon Johnson said something about new wine and old bottles, or new bottles and old wine. I don't remember which way it goes. But whatever it was, it made the point that State Department's wonderful, but it's been around. We need to protect the independence of this new agency. And so we are not part of American foreign policy. We report directly into the administration. We do not report through any other agency. And as I knew I had it in my head. He was the, you all know who it is, Dean Rusk. He said that Peace Corps is not part of American foreign policy, and by not being part of American foreign policy, it's probably the best of American foreign policy. But, and with every administration, there has been a new joint cable that goes out that reinforces that particular point. And to stay with that point for a moment, as you've been hearing, that we're there in a country as individuals. And as I said earlier, our importance, but more importantly, our safety and security, is to remain there as individuals that have no agenda that goes beyond being an individual with that family and with that community, working on whatever that local issue is. And so our independence of any official foreign policy is absolutely key to our strength in what volunteers do around the world.
And I would add to the security of volunteers at the same time.
Oh, and keeping volunteers secure. It's the way that volunteers can stay secure.
Here's a question which I really do want you to answer. If I applied today, how long would it take to be in the field?
A little better answer than I was a few years ago. And I can compliment everybody for these changes, because these changes were all in place when I came 9 months ago. So I just get to celebrate them and keep tweaking them. But these have been a few years in the making. As of about 3 years ago, somewhere in that range, you could begin to apply online. Well, you could apply online before that, but you can, as of about 3 years ago, decide which country you want to go to and what project you want to do. Now, I was at the University of Maryland at the time, and I had some of my students coming in, and they say, I want to go to Macedonia, and I want to work with people with special needs. And I'm going, what? No, Peace Corps didn't contact me and ask me if it was okay to do this. No, you joined Peace Corps. Peace Corps decides what you're going to do. Well, I've discovered that it is a wonderful way to bring people into Peace Corps. for them to think about the commitment they're making, particularly in the technical area in which they want to serve. They also are very good about saying, if it doesn't work out here, I'm good there. Or, you know, you don't have any more of children with special needs, I'll go do something else. So we're able to juggle that quite nicely. The important part, too, is that you find out. You can fill out the application. Some people say it takes about an hour, which is different than those 85 pages from before. So it's about an hour. And you can hear within about 2 months of whether this is working out. And it changes the whole nature. Again, it's how Peace Corps has changed, that as you know, most of you probably have Amazon Prime, and you know, you do your order and then you're watching that little box as it goes on the airplane and all its trip across the United States. Well, people are expecting, one, for things to happen quickly, and two, to track how they're doing. And so we are a very transparent tracking kind of, we're not like Amazon, I can promise you, but we really make it a process, and it's a joint process with every applicant.
Let me ask you a series of questions relating to the third goal about Peace Corps, return Peace Corps volunteers, and what they do here to bring their experience and knowledge and values to their communities in the U.S. One question, says it in a certain negative way, but I'll let you take care of it. The Office of the Third Goal has been deprioritized in recent years. Can you speak to how Peace Corps will engage returned volunteers to share lessons learned in their work, home, and communities?
Recognizing Peace Corps as a lifetime of service is really part of our priorities working forward. As I say, we've been talking about connection and how technology can enhance connection, but being the returned Peace Corps volunteer in serving for life is another very strong priority. What does this look like? One of the components that I think many people know, that as far as our budget goes, we're about everything that helps a volunteer get in place and everything about the 2 years of a volunteer service, but we don't have authorization for very much once that person comes home. That person becomes a U.S. citizen and, like all of us, lives life, a happy life. So our third goal primarily within the agency is about helping with that readjustment and getting back here, which we want to do as best we can. However, and I'm going to come back to the technology part, because the opportunities for us to celebrate, for us to honor, for us to bring visibility to the lifetime work of these upwards of 230,000 volunteers, and I want to also say probably 30,000, I sort of made that number up, but I can't be too far off, former Peace Corps staff whose lives have been changed, we need to do a better job of. And that is a new effort that we're working on. Kate Rafferty is here, and that's part of what her set of responsibilities are. And let me give just one example of what that looks like. That most returning volunteers of the last 10, 15, 20 years keeps in touch. They're part of scholarships. They're mentoring their students through the next 4 years of school. They're continuing to give advice and maybe even wedding gifts to their counterparts. This is happening all over the world. And it's sort of a quiet set of activities that are among thousands and thousands of people. We want to be more purposeful in highlighting what that is, because this is a whole part of how returned volunteers are continuing to give back to their communities, give back to their countries in this very indigenous Peace Corps-like way. We also want to look at ways that returned volunteers might be able to online, be able to provide technical support in countries where volunteers are serving. I mean, we got a few hoops to go through to try to turn that into something exciting, but we love the idea, and we want to see how we can work with that. That would be another way that returned volunteers can stay highly connected. And another situation, which again comes back to the private sector, we want to be able to quantify, a little bit term of art here, but for example, I was with the Department of Transportation last week, actually for the combined federal campaign, and there were a host of maybe 40 returned volunteers who had come together at transportation. And their conversations about what they're giving back in transportation, to be able to, in a more focused way, capture that and be able to bring a lot more visibility to that. And to do that in education, because we know that many go into education, I would really love us to do that in, again, the private sector and some of the parts of private sector that returned Peace Corps volunteers go into. So we know that with third goal in the office, it's more about getting returning volunteers off and running. It is an effort that we need to draw on. I think of NPCA, there's Anne, that they can help us think this through and work this through about more intentional ways of describing all the ways that returned volunteers are giving back. We collectively need to do a better job of that, and we can help set a course for it, but we're going to need every one of you to help us make that happen.
I should say NPCA, for those watching, National Peace Corps Association, Association of Returned Peace Corps Volunteers. And again, I think that those are some of the connections that can be expanded in terms of finding ways to use Peace Corps volunteers, return Peace Corps volunteers, in helping define what happens in their former countries as well as in their current country. One of the questions that, particularly you should, you're a good person to give this answer, not only about what is Peace Corps' presence in the Islamic world, but given the difficulties of dealing with gender norms and the differences in Islamic countries, how are we supporting volunteers and helping them both integrate in those countries in an effective way and carry out their development role in those countries in an effective way?
That's a really good question, and it goes beyond Islamic countries. It goes to every country. I mean, there's variations on themes based on cultures and cultural norms of every country. And as I think some of you know, that 63% of all Peace Corps volunteers now are women. When Peace Corps started in 1961, it was just about the reverse. And so women volunteers are a very important part of who we are and a very important part of the integration into communities. We have, and we have had legislation that has helped us along in this process, have made some very significant shifts, well, not necessarily shifts, but let's say we've grown. We've developed much more training, better training, and programming that bring men and women into this conversation about supporting women and the roles that women can play. So you have the professional roles, and I'm thinking Kimberly gave the example of the GLOW Camp. That is an important example in Peace Corps about how we work with teenage boys and teenage girls in countries about genders and working across genders and that component. And so in the workforce, as Peace Corps volunteers serve, they're working on these topics formally and informally. But the volunteers themselves have a lot more support if anything happens. They have a lot better training as to how to manage difficult situations. The male volunteers have much more training in understanding role differences and how to work with them. We also have training for the for the host country staff. And the conversations we have with host country staff is opening up collectively eyes about and ears about how to support women in these particular societies. And we are informally even extending some of these orientations outwards into counterparts, communities, and even host families, so that we're culturally appropriately really thinking through, talking through effective roles of women in the communities where they serve.
One of the, someone who is also an RPCV from Tunisia, mm-hmm. but in 71, 73, and whose daughter, RPCV from Morocco, raises the question about security in the sense of when she was a volunteer in the 70s, and I should say when we were volunteers in the 60s, we didn't worry very much about moving around mm-hmm. the country. And today, there's a greater degree of restriction on mm-hmm. the ability of, the desire on the part of Peace Corps for right. volunteers to stay in their community,
yeah.
and the obvious tendency for volunteers to also want to get out.
Right.
How do you strike the balance?
Yeah. I think about what some Peace Corps volunteers did in the 60s, myself exceptioned. I'm so glad most people didn't know some of what I did. Then today, part of is how we create an understanding with the volunteer community, and it comes from data. Data are very important. But as we look at our safety and security data, we know that coming to the capital city is not one of the more exciting things to do. It is for the volunteers, but not for us. And things happen. They're more likely to happen in capital cities. They're also more likely to happen when you're traveling and when you're in places that you don't know. And so our training with volunteers is about that understanding, that it is about their own sense of purpose and keeping themselves safe is to, one, the importance of staying close to their communities, and two, we're much more, and they're much more careful about how they travel and where they go and how they manage that process. Now, part of the good news in all of this is we know with the three goals, staying home a lot of the time is successful in terms of what your role is. And in its own interesting way, because of a certain amount of connections, particularly with phones, you can reach out even if you're not physically visiting. Let me give an odd example, not odd, perfect example, which goes back a few years. I was in Kazakhstan as acting country director for a few weeks. And in March, 25 volunteers who had been part of small enterprise development came together in Almaty for training. They had gone to their sites in November. And as you all know, we're talking about, you know, 10 feet of snow and 35 degrees below zero. And a lot of the winter, you're sort of hovering around that central stove and doing your job and going back to that central stove. So that these volunteers in a country that's half the size of the US didn't see each other. It was dark most of the time. They told me the stories of what it's like to live in Kazakhstan in January. One of the interesting components of what happened when they got together in March was, hey, you know, how did that curriculum go that I sent you? Or, you know, did your mom recover from her surgery? That, or thank you for that text asking me how I was doing. That they had used largely just simple texts over this time to support each other. No one had early terminated, not one. But it was those supporting ways that you can do even if you're not leaving a community. So yes, there's a need to leave a community from time to time, but we are trying to ensure that we've got protocols for that that helps keep the volunteers safe and other kinds of means that they can stay connected when they really feel they need to have a conversation in English, for example.
Great. There's a question about, does Peace Corps have a particular role in supporting those organizations within the countries where they're serving, which do similar kinds of development efforts within the country. Mm-hmm. The example was Core Africa, which facilitates the same opportunities of local service to Africans. And
yeah, I think about those kinds of organizations. I also think about other national organizations, the Germans, the French, the Koreans now, based on our program, the Japanese, et cetera, that we, again, I talk about it as being side by side, that, again, I remember from my own experiences that the German volunteers had more money, and so they were farther along in actually building the particular bridge. And our volunteers sort of borrowed their good food from time to time, but were a support in terms of that bridge being built, more on the people side. And so we do get involved, but we get involved locally as we see collectively the harmony between whatever they're doing and whatever we're doing, and right within the community itself.
There's a question here, I promise it was from the audience, about Latin America. And the question relates to the Latin America obviously has unique challenges, and what are Peace Corps' top initiatives in Latin America? And I'd sort of rephrase that a little bit by saying that in each of the countries in the region, there are obviously basic challenges with respect to development, strengthening institutions. And one of the things that's new over the course of the past 20, 30, 40 years, is the existence of non-governmental organizations, civil society organizations. And I know that Peace Corps has begun to have volunteers working with some civil society organizations. And I'm curious whether or not that is a something that's being done more often in Latin America.
Actually, I'm not as well versed on that whole topic as I should be. I see Greg over here, who's much better versed on it than I am. But first, our involvement with non-governmental organizations is very, as I said before, very dependent on our relationship with the ministries. And we, in effect, and I know when I was in Ecuador, talking to a volunteer who was working with an NGO having to do with health and HIV in the schools, and with the school teachers. Well, she was working in the offices of that NGO, even as she was in the schools, but it was with the full permission of the local government. So I'm gonna sort of spear off the specific answer, but to say what our relationships can be are dependent on the goodwill that we have in the community with the officials that we're ultimately responsible to. And what we do, I mean, region by region of the world is again dependent on what is being asked for and what some of the countries feel as priorities. I'm gonna go back to Ecuador for a moment. Actually, I wish I could, it's such a gorgeous country. But talking with the president of Ecuador, which started to be a, you know, meeting and greeting, turned into be a very long conversation, with his own history of being raised by, not raised by Peace Corps volunteers, but the volunteers that were in his village growing up. And he commented, among other things, that Ecuador has a long-term interest in bringing a much stronger English component into their education, and ultimately to see whether they might even become bilingual. So he said there's a really key role that Peace Corps volunteers play that can help nudge us in communities in that direction. So I was surprised when we had that conversation, and it was not one I was thinking of in a Latin American country. So each country offers some surprises sometimes as to how they see purposeful activity for volunteers. And we sort of look at it country by country.
Okay. Let you make any final comments in closing. I just want to make a point. What you just said about the president of Ecuador is something that many of us have heard in our conversations with other heads of state and members of parliament throughout the world, really, that connection with volunteers has affected their lives just as much as the volunteers' experience in their countries has affected our lives. And the Harris Wohlford Global Citizen Award has shown over the last 5 or 6 years, those individuals who have been affected by volunteers and have gone on to play enormously positive roles in their countries and in the world, I think demonstrates the continuing impact of the Peace Corps.
Oh, yes. I mean, just to stay with that, the president in Macedonia had 4 or 5 volunteers in his city when he was mayor that he's still in touch with. The president of Sierra Leone, again, talked about how critical Peace Corps was to that country at this point in time in his own experience growing up. I mean, any of us in the room can know these kinds of experiences. And I think it's one of the reasons that Peace Corps has stayed so strong and countries are so positive about Peace Corps being there. So as a closing comment, I want to affirm that who we are, that goes back to 1961, when you think of that, now looks like sort of grainy picture of President Kennedy on this day, March 1st, I now, that goes forward. And that 5-6 months later, when we passed the legislation with the mission and 3 goals, that we've stayed true. We have strayed through, pointing to 2 former directors here. We've stayed through the decades. I was talking to Nick Craw this morning, who was a director in the 70s, and he was talking about, you know, those same principles of Peace Corps. We've stayed strong, and I think we've stayed strong because we have really hung on to those core elements. As we go forward, I know we can stay strong. I know we continue to stay relevant. We have integrated ourselves more broadly into the international environment and into the US environment as it works overseas. And importantly, and what I'm really committing to, is to further honor Return Peace Corps volunteers, their service, highlight it, recognize it, because it is really what has helped sustain Peace Corps, and to use our latest ways of those techniques to be able to further that goal, as well as the work of Peace Corps volunteers themselves. Encourage your friends, your parents, your children to go in the Peace Corps.
Thank you very much.
You did very well. That's good.